Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today as we have an interruption to our regularly scheduled programming to bring you an essay that I've been working on over the course of this past week. As I've mentioned here in the podcast, I was invited out to the Church of Psilomethoxen Entheogenesis event out in Austin, Texas over this past weekend. And of course, there's been some controversy, there's been some questions, and this is my essay kind of dealing with all of that to the best of my ability. And I'm not going to get into a big explanation of it right now because it's all pretty self-explanatory once I get into the essay, which I will be sharing with you very shortly. So first, I would just like to thank those who have made contributions in support of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast over this past couple of weeks that I had been preparing for Entheogenesis and traveling for it and now back home. I'd like to thank David, who's made a contribution via PayPal. And would also like to thank Christina, if I hadn't mentioned her before, I might have, Christina, Paul, and Vishal, all of whom have signed up over at my Patreon page and are making a monthly contribution in support of my work and the podcast. Of course, as I always mention, this is a listener-supported podcast. There are no sponsors, there are no advertisers, there is no larger organization of which this is a part. This is just me and you and my guests. And so if you would like to support this podcast, it is always welcome and appreciated. You can stop by my personal webpage at martinball.net. There's a PayPal link at the top right of the page. And there is also a link over to my Patreon page, which is patreon.com/martinwball, with a variety of different levels of support and patronage, over there at whatever level fits you best, everywhere from $1 a month up to $100 a month. And of course, at that top level, that gets you a 1 hour monthly video call, check-in consultation with me. And of course, I am always available for 30, 60, and 90-minute consultation calls to help you integrate or navigate your entheogenic experience from a non-dual and energetic perspective. And just because a lot of people have been asking me recently, yes, I do offer coaching and mentorship for those who are on the facilitator side of things, and I'm always more than happy to set up a consultation with you as well. My main webpage for all of that is nondualentheogenicintegration.com. And so where are we at? Oh, I don't know if I've mentioned, I've finished recording all of the audio bits for the Fate of Marani audiobook, and we'll now be working on creating new music to go along with that audiobook, and haven't even started that, but I've got a lot of inspiration bubbling up that I'm looking forward to doing. So that's kind of next on my project list, is to record a bunch of new music, and you know, I'll be sharing that as it comes into existence, and eventually that audiobook will be ready to go. But that's where I'm at in terms of that project, for anyone who's curious. And I think that that's enough of the introductory remarks. Of course, I will throw in some of my music at the end of this sharing of this essay, but let's go ahead and get into it, shall we? Though, actually, before I do that, I will mention that I do have this available as a PDF if anybody would like to have it to read. I have included some photographs within the PDF version of this essay. So if you'd like a copy of that, just shoot me an email at martinwball@gmail.com, and I'll give you a PDF copy of it. Okay? Sounds good? All right. Psilomethoxen, Usona, the Church, and Entheogenesis, the View from Inside the Womb of Sacred Synthesis, by me. Last weekend, the Church of Psilomethoxen held their first in-person church service in the form of a one-day public event at Music Hill Ranch in Austin, Texas, on April 15, 2023. The event, Entheogenesis, the Womb of Sacred Synthesis, featured speakers, workshops, yoga, live music, DJs, and sacrament in the form of mushroom gummies that participants were offered upon arriving at the check-in station. The entire event and the days surrounding it were billed as a church service, though it certainly wasn't your ordinary church service. This featured open consumption of an entheogenic sacrament, and the topics of discussion and education all revolved around entheogens. As an invited speaker who had the honor of being the last presenter on the main stage before the evening turned over to DJs and dancing, I had the opportunity to be present for the full event from the day before, to the day after. Without getting into any details just yet, I'll kick things off by saying it was a beautiful event and a great success. It was the kind of church service that I can vibe with, and the whole thing was just what I'd needed. More on this below. However, there was something that, while not addressed directly through any of the talks or presentations, was on a lot of people's minds. The fact that a quote study had been released a couple of days prior to the event that declared that the church's promoted sacrament was a quote fiction and not what they claimed it to be. While this essay isn't going to be able to present any final conclusions or definitive answers to this question, I am going to provide a well-rounded look at it and put it all in the context of my personal experiences and observations for those who might be interested to hear my perspective on the matter. I'll say at the start that this probably won't be completely satisfying to anyone involved. I'm in the business of sharing what I know and not claiming to know things that I don't know. I do try and take a nuanced perspective when possible, and that's the best I can offer at this time. Thus, this essay. Psilomethoxin, is it real? This is a question that currently many people are asking, and more specifically, asking me. This has been promoted by a recent publication from the psychedelic research company USONA Institute by Samuel William and Alexander Sherwood. The publication is entitled Fungi Fiction: Analytical Investigation into the Church of Psilomethoxin's Alleged Novel Compound Using UPLC-HRMS. Though it visually appears in a format that is similar to a peer-reviewed scientific journal publication, it does not appear to be a peer-reviewed scientific document, and as the authors state, was shared with the Five Hive website forum for, quote, discussion and dissemination of testing results. The Five Hive is a website for 5-MeO-DMT enthusiasts and is not a body of scientific reviewers. The authors did not state if anyone at Five Hive was versed in the specific scientific details of the processes and techniques used in the analysis. Their conclusion was that the apparent effects of the church's mushrooms are placebo and have accused the church of engaging in, quote, misleading marketing practices. What's going on here, and why does anyone care? Entheogenic religious rites. Let's get some background. The psychedelic landscape in the United States is currently experiencing a very rapid change in that numerous individuals and groups are seeking to apply the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, RFRA, and getting exemptions from drug laws for their desired consumption of psychedelic substances and compounds as religious sacraments that would otherwise be deemed illegal activity. This is a widespread phenomenon and is happening throughout the United States and surrounding a number of psychedelic substances and compounds. Prior to this contemporary trend, there have only been three religions or churches that have been granted legal exemptions for psychedelic consumption, these being the Native American Church with peyote, the Unión del Vegetal with huasca or ayahuasca, and the Santo Daime, Daime or ayahuasca. Currently, there are many more new religions and churches that are doing the legal work to become established, and their choice of sacraments cover a much wider range than peyote and ayahuasca. One such church is the Church of Psilomethoxin, hereafter CP. What distinguishes CP from the other churches is that they are promoting the use of a purportedly novel psychedelic compound, psilomethoxin, which they are creating through a process of saturating psilocybin mushroom substrates with 5-MeO-DMT, which then leads the mushrooms to produce 4-OH-5-MeO-DMT, or psilomethoxin. The mushrooms are cultivated by the church and provided to members in the forms of capsules of dried powdered mushrooms and also via gummies and chocolates. CP considers psilomethoxin to be a universal sacrament in that, as a novel compound, it is not associated with any particular culture, lineage, or tradition, unlike the case with psilocybin mushrooms, iboga, peyote, ayahuasca, etc. According to the literature provided by CP, the inspiration for psilomethoxin came to one of the church's founders, Ian Ben Wies, while personally working experientially with psilocybin mushrooms and 5-MeO-DMT. Later, using research done by Alexander Shulgin, the church founders have stated to have developed their own process for the production of psilomethoxin. It should be noted that CP has their own scientists and have not fully made public their process and are planning on conducting their own scientific studies and analysis. We, the general public, do not yet have any specific details for how this biosynthetic process proceeds or what methods are used to coax psilocybin mushrooms to uptake the 5-MeO-DMT and convert it into 4-OH-5-MeO-DMT, psilomethoxin. CP is a majority veteran-founded church and looks to serve and support veterans suffering from PTSD, depression, and suicidal ideation via regular microdosing of psilomethoxin mushrooms. While legal access to psychedelic medicines in the form of psychedelic-assisted therapy is coming, for example, here in Oregon, psilocybin-assisted therapy is starting up this year. As many observers have noted, vets are in crisis and cannot wait for such programs, and when they do become active, will most likely be cost prohibitive for most, especially veterans who, let's be honest, already receive really shitty care and have very few resources where suicide remains a leading cause of death. By providing vets with access to an entheogen for regular microdosing, CP is doing vets a service that other entheogenic churches are also performing. What's unique about CP is that they are going about it in a very open and public way. CP also makes their sacrament available to the public who sign up as members of the church via their website with a membership fee, which then grants them access to purchase the sacrament and also participate in church-run services, integration work, and events, both online and in person. A result of this approach is that anyone in the world can go to their website, join as a member, currently with a reference from an already existing member, and then order the sacrament for themselves and give it a try. Due to this approach, interest in and experimenting with their sacrament, which is what they tend to call the mushrooms within the church, has rapidly spread around the world. Many entheogenic churches only make their sacraments available in ceremonial context with a facilitator. CP has sought to make their universal sacrament available to anyone and have distributed it widely. Which brings us to USONA. USONA did not seek to collaborate with CP, and their study was not conducted with the approval or support of CP. In the acknowledgement section of their paper, they write that they acquired a sample from a, quote, anonymous donor. This fact alone raises a serious chain of custody and authenticity question for the paper and subsequent analysis. Ideally, this could have been addressed in the paper with the authors acknowledging that they cannot be 100% certain that the purported sample from CP actually did come from CP. I would imagine that if this were presented as, quote, evidence in court, it would be rejected for that reason alone, as the authors are taking it on good faith and trust that the sample's origins are properly identified, yet they do not have access to any direct evidence that this is true. I would also imagine that this would be problematic for any peer-reviewed scientific journal as well. If you can't prove that the sample is what you claim it is, then how are the results of the analysis to be considered valid and accurate? Aren't we just left with a, well, maybe? This, of course, doesn't make USONA wrong. It just raises serious questions about the validity of their study because they seem to be relying on trust in both their source and in us, the readers, and not verifiable data. To accept their conclusions as definitive, we need to trust that their sample really is what they say it is, but no one can truly verify it. Why me? So, why me? Why specifically are people asking me about whether psilomethoxin is real or if people's reports of their experiences with it are merely the placebo effect, as USONA proposes? Well, I'm not just some random dude who has the answers to such questions, and as I said at the beginning of this essay, I don't have a definitive answer. First off, I'm well known in the 5-MeO-DMT world as one of the leading authorities on this particular molecule. I'm the most prolific author in the world on the subject of 5-MeO-DMT, and I'm the person who originally gave it the nickname of the God Molecule in 2008 as a result of my first full experience of this profound entheogen. In short, I'm the 5-MeO guy. I, like many individuals in the 5-MeO-DMT world, was invited to give psilomethoxam mushrooms a try by CP founders for precisely the reason that I'm not only well experienced with psilocybin mushrooms at the experiential level, but also 5-MeO-DMT. Psilomethoxam is basically an orally active form of 5-MeO-DMT, and if CP is correct that they are producing psilomethoxam mushrooms, then experientially, one should be able to notice distinct differences between psilomethoxam and psilocybin mushrooms. In the psychedelic world, this is what is known as bioassaying psychedelic substances. Doing a chemical analysis will tell you what a compound is made of, but not what it feels like or what kinds of experiences it gives rise to. The only way to accurately know this is to try taking it directly and observing and documenting one's experience. This is precisely what I've done. CP provided me with a generous supply of capsules, and I tried them out at various dosages. I also made a video of myself consuming, experiencing, and real-time reporting on my experience. The video has proven to be popular online. Furthermore, I am the host of the 15-year and counting Entheogenic Evolution podcast. I first had Greg Lake, one of the co-founders of CP and Lawyer, as a guest on my podcast to discuss the topic of entheogenic religious freedom in the United States. Later, after the launch of CP, I hosted Greg and his wife Jenna on the podcast to discuss psilomethoxam and the church, and also conducted the interview while having taken a moderate dose of the sacrament they had provided to me. A few weeks later, I interviewed Ian Benweis, another lawyer, veteran, and CP co-founder. So, I've been involved with CP, have personal communications with its founders, and have invited them on my show, and have promoted awareness of psilomethoxam mushrooms and helped bring public attention to all of it. It's reasonable to assume that many have sought to try out psilomethoxam mushrooms because of the attention I've helped bring to it. Indeed, several people have emailed me to say as much, and several people at Entheogenesis told me that they were there because of me. I am not a chemist, nor am I a mycologist. I cannot speak to, quote, the science of any of this. I am, however, a phenomenologist, careful observer, and a trusted communicator of psychedelic experience. Academically, my area of specialty is religious studies. As an anthropological participant observer, I have conducted academic fieldwork at the Mescalero Apache Reservation in New Mexico. While I am not a promoter of any specific religion or tradition, I have participated in and reported on my experiences in the Native American Church, the Santo Daime Congregation, the Church of the Holy Light of the Queen, which in 2009, while I was attending, took the federal government to court to gain its RFRA recognition, and have freely shared my experiences with the Temple of Awakening Divinity, where I first was served 5-MeO-DMT. And via my podcast, have interviewed countless individuals across the spectrum of psychedelic religion, spirituality, ceremonial traditions, and philosophical and therapeutic approaches. For all these reasons, people have come to me with the question, is psilomethoxam real? Placebo or the real deal? From my direct experience of bioassaying the sacrament of CP, my answer is yes. These mushrooms are clearly different than regular psilocybin mushrooms. I am not able to prove it in any way, for as I stated, I am not a chemist or a mycologist and cannot, with any authority, speak on such issues. From my experience, the mushrooms provided to me by CP are noticeably different in just about every way from any prior species of psilocybin mushrooms I've ingested. Here, I can only speak for myself and my experience. The come-on time period is significantly longer than with psilocybin mushrooms. Characteristic visual phenomena that I've experienced with essentially every other mushroom experience, even at low doses, are absent. Bodily sensations are different, the peak is different, and also the come down, which I experience as rather rapid. Though I was given these mushrooms fully informed that they were, quote, psilomethoxin mushrooms, as a careful observer of phenomenological experience, I strongly suspect that if I had been given them blindly and not told what they were, I would have concluded that there was something different about them, as they did not mirror or replicate my prior ample experiences with psilocybin mushrooms. Of course, the possibility for such a blind assessment is gone. So on that specific question, we'll never know. According to USONA, this would be an example of the placebo effect. Personally, I'm highly skeptical of this when it comes to myself, though I, of course, cannot rule it out. My skepticism arises from the fact that I have a chronic and often debilitating medical condition, and in the years that I've suffered from this condition, I've had countless doctors, fellow sufferers, and well-meaning individuals make countless recommendations for treatments, medications, supplements, dietary changes, meditations, apps, programs, etc., many presented as, this is the thing that's really going to make a difference. And basically, nothing really has. In some respects, I wish I were more susceptible to the placebo effect, because then maybe one of these suggestions might have miraculously worked for me. But they haven't. As another example, I recently received a collection of herbal gummies that were provided to me with the statement that it was an herbal alternative to MDMA. And in my experience, it was mostly a nothing experience, and not even remotely comparable to an experience of actual MDMA. So, no placebo. Yet, this doesn't mean that I'm right and USONA is wrong. Bioassaying isn't definitive proof. It's just subjective personal observation and reporting. I could be wrong, and USONA may be correct. All I can say with certainty is that in my personal experience, the mushrooms provided by CP have felt distinctly different from any other mushrooms I've experienced previously. Does that prove that they have psilomethoxin in them? No. Is it possible that it's just the placebo effect? Yes. Do I think so? No. Unlike USONA, I know exactly where my mushrooms came from. They did not come to me anonymously. I got them directly from the church founders. However, like USONA, I have no authority to claim any certainty about the question of placebo. USONA did not conduct any research regarding the question of placebo, so their conclusions suggesting this in their paper is thoroughly unscientific and really nothing more than a guess or plausible explanation for the fact that many people, not just myself, are reporting novel experiences with the mushrooms provided by CP. There is no evidence to suggest this conclusion based on what was available to them. Making credible claims about the placebo effect would require a double-blind study of actual participants, carefully screening materials, knowing their origin and composition with 100% accuracy, and measuring reported results against a known placebo. USONA didn't do anything like this. They posit this as a reasonable conclusion, but there could be others, which I'll now suggest. First, I'll mention that CP has put out a statement on their website criticizing the science of USONA's analysis and methods, and I cannot speak to any of that, as I've mentioned. It can be found at their website at psilomethoxin.com/psychedelic_capitalism/. I won't address any of the science issues, but will address some of the religious arguments made by CP below shortly. But let's consider, are there other options to the placebo analysis? Here are two. One, that anonymous sample didn't come from CP, so of course you didn't find any psilomethoxin. Two, maybe your anonymous source got a bad batch from CP. As I'm sure we're all aware, some batches of mushrooms can be duds. Perhaps the methods used by CP are producing inconsistent results. From my personal experience, the batch that I initially received from CP for my personal bioassay seems to be significantly stronger than the 300 milligram doses I enjoyed at the entheogenesis event over the weekend. But that's just subjective personal reporting. Before I turn to the religious argument made by CP in the response to USONA, I would like to address conflicting reports I've received from people who have tried CP's sacrament. Reports that people have made back to me of their experiences range from profound, I love it, and totally unique, to seems just like regular mushrooms to me, and weak. Here, I think that personal reporting is difficult to gauge because many people who are already experienced with 5-MeO-DMT were among the first to try the sacrament. This complicates matters because once one has been introduced to the full power of 5-MeO-DMT, the God molecule experience has a well-deserved reputation for dominating other psychedelics, and that after having worked with 5, other psychedelics become less like themselves and more like 5 in subsequent experiences. No other psychedelic has a similar reputation and phenomenology. If we were doing an actual study of the purported effects of CP's sacrament, we'd need to take this factor into account, and to design such a study, I'd highly recommend that 5-MeO-DMT users be separated from those who haven't yet worked with it and see if their self-reporting shows any significant differences. Many people who are involved with CP have prior experience with 5-MeO-DMT, and the God molecule was just as much a topic of discussion among the participants of entheogenesis as was the sacrament itself. There's also the possibility that those who do not have prior experience with 5-MeO-DMT might not be able to really recognize what is potentially different about CP's sacrament. If the sacrament truly is edible 5-MeO-DMT, then it would present more as a feeling or energy that some might be unable to distinguish from regular psilocybin mushrooms. For example, Terence McKenna famously dismissed the 5-MeO-DMT experience as a, quote, feeling that he found uninteresting compared to how much he enjoyed hallucinating on DMT, despite the fact that 5-MeO-DMT is several orders of magnitude more powerful, and in my opinion, far more profound, than DMT. Something similar could be happening for those who are trying the sacrament without prior 5 experience, who then describe it as weak. This is the kind of issue that could be properly investigated with a well-designed and executed study. And for the record, I've had one associate who is deeply experienced with 5-MeO-DMT report to me that he feels that they are just regular psilocybin mushrooms. So, totally inconsistent reports. Sorry, but there's no uniform answer available here at this time. Let's turn then to the religious argument. The religious argument. This probably won't be satisfying to most, but sincerely held religious belief is a protected and legally recognized category in U.S. law and society. For example, when Hobby Lobby went to court to deny reproductive health care to their employees, it didn't matter that, scientifically speaking, Plan B doesn't cause abortions. What mattered to the courts was that as a person, as corporations are considered in U.S. law, with religious freedom rights, Hobby Lobby professed to believe that Plan B caused abortions, and therefore was against their right to practice their religion as afforded under RFRA. A somewhat parallel argument was made in the Santo Daime religious freedom case that occurred in the court system here in Oregon. Prior to going to court, the agreement was made to not refer to Daime as ayahuasca, despite the fact that they contain the same fundamental ingredients. The argument was that in the Santo Daime religion, the tea is prepared and prayed for in such a way that it is sacralized with the spirit of Jiramidam, thereby rendering it not ayahuasca through the practice of their sincere religious beliefs. The result of the court case rendered the drinking of Daime a protected religious freedom, but not the drinking of ayahuasca. This is similar to Catholic theology and doctrine of transubstantiation, where the cracker and wine served at communion isn't actually a cracker and wine, but the body and blood of Christ. In their response to USONA, CP has made a similar argument. They write, It should be noted that the church has never, at any time, laid claim to the fact that psilomethoxin has ever been positively identified in its sacrament. Our claims to the existence of psilomethoxin at this time are solely based on faith, bolstered by our and our members' own direct experiences with the sacrament. So, they have a process in place that was inspired by co-founder Ian Benwee's experience with psilocybin mushrooms and 5-MeO-DMT, and they are preparing their sacrament through this process, and they have faith, based on their experiences with the sacrament, that it contains psilomethoxin, and explicitly state that they do not purport to have scientific evidence to support this religious claim at this time. If they were a pharmaceutical company, this claim wouldn't cut it. But as a religious body and church, CP can make this claim and have it fit right in with legal and religious precedent. That's religious freedom in action. Again, this might be unsatisfying or frustrating for some, but USONA seems to be overlooking the fact that CP is a religious organization and not a pharmaceutical company. As they write in their conclusion, "The lack of evidence of novel compounds in the sample, coupled with the implausibility of the proposed biosynthetic pathway, suggests that the Church of Psilomethoxin is engaging in misleading marketing practices and may be misrepresenting the material that they are distributing." Here, they're treating CP as a business selling a product, rather than as a church distributing its sacrament that is provided for a fee. Though it functions very differently in that it does not distribute daime outside of in-person church services, fees are paid by members for attending Santo Daime services, known as works, so paying money for access to the sacrament occurs in other contexts. The difference is that CP is, in addition to being a church, also a non-profit organization that uses its profits to support veterans' access to healthcare. Obviously, this is a more nuanced and complex situation than a pharmaceutical company marketing a product and pocketing the profits. Is it a scam? This is a question that some people have asked me about this situation. Here, I'm going to definitively side with CP, in that in my interactions with them, and especially getting to experience firsthand the community that is building up around CP via my participation and observations at the Entheogenesis event, my assessment is that they are unquestioningly sincere, well-meaning, big-hearted, and genuine with all that they are doing. I do not believe that anyone involved with CP is looking to deceive or scam anyone, and that they are very sincere in their beliefs about what they are providing and what they are doing. While this doesn't address the psilomethoxin question directly, it does address their veracity as a religious and nonprofit organization that is focused on helping vets and getting them access to psychedelic therapy via their sacrament, regardless of what it chemically contains. They sincerely believe that their sacrament is what they say it is, and hope to have the scientific evidence to support this claim at some point in the future. I do not believe, my subjective opinion, that anyone involved with CP is intentionally misleading anyone for personal gain or profit. I see no evidence that they are cynically distributing a product that they know to be something other than what they are claiming it to be. Before sharing more about the event and what I observed there, some full disclosure is in order. The past 5 years have been extremely challenging for me. 2019 started off with a personal medical crisis that is now a collection of chronic issues that completely upended my life from top to bottom. I was in crisis mode for most of the year and was struggling just to be. I had to take emergency medical leave from my teaching position at Southern Oregon University, and my life became very insular and disconnected from pretty much everything other than making it through daily existence. 2020 wasn't much better, and all the stress of the situation led to my wife wanting a separation and my moving out. All around the advent of coronavirus, which disrupted everyone's lives and also led to only a brief return to university teaching as plummeting student enrollment resulted in me being laid off the following term. All that happened, compounding my personal struggles, but my marriage eventually resolved and we reunited. Next up, in early 2021, Symposia set their abusive and toxic internet outrage machine on me, which effectively resulted in my becoming a demonized exile in public life. In the time since all this happened, I've lived a very insulated and hermit-like existence and have focused on rebuilding my life while learning to live with a chronic health disability and find ease, comfort, and productivity as well as I can for what I have to live with. Most of my interactions with others happen primarily through video calls on the computer, and I work privately and independently in my office on most days. I get out a lot with my wife and son for outdoor adventures and bird photography, and we travel together as often as we can. But it's just the three of us. It's been very isolating, with very little celebration, human connection, or social interaction outside of my immediate family group and occasional meetups with friends. Entheogenesis was the medicine that I needed. I received so much love and support from the organizers and participants, and got so many hugs and witnessed so much joy, beauty, and togetherness that I was brought to tears on many occasions during my extended weekend in Austin at the Music Hill Ranch with all the good people of the Church of Silomethoxen. I got to see firsthand vets processing and healing with entheogenic medicines. I got to share of myself, and my presence and participation was received with love and kindness. I saw people processing and people healing, people finding community, support, and love. There is no way that I can adequately express my appreciation and gratitude for all that the Church of Silomethoxen has done for myself and for many others. I'm not a veteran, but I've been through some very challenging stuff these past 5 years, and it's been very lonely and isolating, and it's been painful. This was the first time in 5 years that any group has invited me into their house for human-to-human contact and interaction. For me, this is the true medicine that the Church of Silomethoxen is providing. This is what I'm grateful for. Personally, I do think that they've got something special in their sacrament. I don't mind if science eventually proves me wrong. I don't think USONA has done it. I, along with many others, will be waiting to see what CP's own research shows, and will be interested to see if others outside the organization are able to confirm it. I don't personally have a stake in the outcome of this question. For now, I'm comfortable giving my support for what CP is actually doing and the services they are providing for those who need it. I've never been around veterans working, healing, and processing with entheogens before this past weekend, and I'll tell you, it was powerful. And it's needed. Love, support, and community. These are basic human needs, and CP is giving that to veterans and others as well. We all need more of it. In my assessment, American society is deeply, deeply sick. It's cannibalizing itself. Oppositional thinking and us versus them is dominating virtually all public discourse. Everyone is out to get and undermine everyone else, it seems. It's a free-for-all of hate, lies, and misinformation. Mass shootings are once again on the rise. Radicalization, neo-fascism, and racism, and outright delusional thinking are becoming all too common norms. A fanatical and delusional cult holds vast swaths of the country in sway. Online hate and judgment are endemic. It's ugly. I don't like it. Perhaps you feel similarly. Music, dance, education, support, love, hugs, community, and healing. That's what entheogenesis was for me. So, thank you, Church of Silomethoxen. I thoroughly enjoyed having the opportunity to spend time with all of you and know that you all truly believe in what you are doing. I recognize your boldness and your big hearts. Your event was awesome and just what I needed. I'll take another, please. And in the meantime, I'll be enjoying that supply of sacrament, regardless of what it contains.